Well, good afternoon. Final day of the conference, huh? Hope it's been a good one for you so far. Lots of good content here. I'm here to do a talk for you on background tasking in WinRT. This is the Windows 8 or Windows Store App background tasking API. I'm going to be building one demo for you live, line by line, so you can see how it comes together. And I'm going to be using two other apps that I've already built to demo some of the key aspects of background tasking. The URL that you see there in Notepad, you can go to at your convenience if you would like a copy of my demos, the Visual Studio Solutions to play with for yourself. Go to that URL at your convenience and download a zip file. It's fairly small. And then you'll have the same bits that I have. Since it is a SkyDrive URL, realize that those last six digits are case sensitive. So I'll leave Notepad running and show it again at the end of the session in case you didn't have time to get that URL. So let's talk about background tasks. So if you're a Windows Store app developer, one of the things that might have been the most shocking to you when you came over to this platform was finding that it does enforce a one app at a time model. That is, in a Windows Store app, when the user is looking at one on the screen, that app is running, obviously. It's getting CPU time. But other Windows Store apps are not. Indeed, the moment the user switches away from your Windows Store app to another, your app is suspended. It generally remains in memory, although, of course, the operating system can decide to terminate it. But it generally remains in memory. But with all the threads in it suspended, it's getting zero CPU time. If the user chooses to switch back to your app, then you get put back on the processor and you get to execute again. But remember, as a rule of thumb, only one Windows Store app at a time can ever be running on a given device. Now, there is one exception to that. If the user snaps his or her screen, drags that little vertical splitter bar out from the left or right-hand side of it so that there are two Windows Store apps displayed side by side, in that case, both of those apps are running. Both are getting CPU time. But that's the exception rather than the rule. When the user cannot see your Windows Store app, it's getting no CPU time. Is there anything you can do about that? No. Now, if you come from a background of building traditional Windows apps, desktop applications, as it were, that may seem kind of new and kind of different, and in fact, it is. If, on the other hand, you're a Windows Phone developer, you're used to that model because it enforces a very similar one app at a time model. But every time I say that to an audience, when I introduce them to Windows Store apps and the whole one app at a time concept, immediately a lot of hands go up. People want to know, but what if I need to do this in the background? What if I need to do that? What if I need to do a background file upload that continues even when my app isn't visible to the user? What if I'm building an app that shows the current time and temperature, and I need to periodically wake up, put a call out on the internet to get that data, and then update a tile or something like that? Is there no way that I can do that in this one app at a time model? Well, the good news is, yeah, you can do all of those things. You can do all of those things and more. But not in the Windows Store app itself. You do it by using a background tasking API that's part of WinRT. Now, there are actually a couple of different background tasking APIs. There's one, for example, encapsulated in a pair of classes named Background Uploader and Background Downloader that are specifically designed to handle the case that you want to do large file uploads or downloads in the background. I may or may not cover those in this session. I may at the end if we have time. But the API that I want to introduce you to is the more general purpose background tasking API in WinRT. It is your outlet. It's how when you build a Windows Store app that needs to be doing things even when it's not seen, if it needs to do things in the background, this API defines what you can and cannot do. Now, as you're going to see in my first demo, there's several steps involved in spinning up a background task. And in fact, even though it's not difficult to do, it's something that lends itself well to a checklist, because if you miss one of the steps, what you'll generally find is that the background task simply does not run. So in my very first demo, we're going to build something live, line by line, so you can see each and every step involved, and we're going to spin up a background task and show that, yes, we can still do processing in the background, even though we're a Windows Store app. After that, we'll jump down into the weeds, start learning more, we'll go deeper, and we'll look at some other demos that show additional capabilities. Now, one thing you should know before we start slinging code is that there are some constraints placed on how much processing you can do in the background. And for this purpose, Windows 8 divides Windows Store apps into two very general categories: lock screen apps and non-lock screen apps. Lock screen apps are actually a little bit more rare. They are apps that are Windows Store apps, but that also has access to the lock screen. There are a few things they can do on the lock screen, and I'll go over all of these later. They can display badges or numbers from 1 to 99 on the lock screen. They can display certain glyphs. In some cases, they can update tile text. Because a lock screen app can only be placed on the lock screen because the user placed it there, those apps are afforded a higher quality of service. A lock screen app, for example, can use up to 2 seconds of CPU time every 15 minutes. That's CPU time, not wall clock time. A normal Windows Store app, however, one that the user has not added to the lock screen, and that is the majority of Windows Store apps, most of them don't know anything about the lock screen, is more limited. You get a total of 1 second of CPU time in the background every 2 hours. Now, there's not an API for finding out how much of your quota you've used up. What happens is, in your background task, if you just grab for all the CPU cycles you can get, hit an infinite loop or something like that, the system will suspend you once your quota is reached. And then it won't schedule you again until that quota is refreshed, which will be up to 2 hours from now. Now, there's nothing I can do, you can do about that. That's just part of this API. The idea is, especially on lower powered devices, to make sure that that app in the foreground is snappy and responsive, because it's getting the bulk of the CPU cycles. It does mean that when you code up a background task, you want to be as efficient as you possibly can. Put a call out on the internet, wait for it to come back, because you're going to use C# 5.0's async await pattern. The time that that's spent waiting is not charged against your CPU time. But you do as little as you can, and you do it as quickly as you can, so that hopefully you won't bump into that 1 second quota every 2 hours. In addition, network bandwidth is limited to apps that are running in the background as well. If you're running on AC power, then there is no limit. You can use as much network bandwidth as you want. If you're running on battery power, however, it's a little bit different. On battery power, you are limited, and how much network bandwidth you're limited to in that background task depends on whether you're a lock screen app or a non-lock screen app. Generally, on a typical connection, maybe a 10 megabit per second connection, a lock screen app will get about 45 megabytes or megabits per hour, whereas a non-lock screen app will get roughly 7.5. Hopefully you won't bump into that. The idea behind the background tasking API is not to let you sit back there just crunching on that CPU at every opportunity you get, or to do massive uploads and downloads of data. The idea is to wake up, maybe make a call out to a web service, get some data back, parse that data, and do something with it, perhaps updating a tile, a lock screen badge, or something like that. Again, if you exceed these quotas, you're not notified of that. There is no mechanism for notifying you. You just suddenly find that you're taken off the CPU and will be put back on it when Windows 8 thinks that the time is right. Now, I hope that doesn't scare you too much, because in practice, you're not going to run into those limitations. So what do we need to do? What do we need to know if we're going to use background tasks in our Windows Store apps? And by the way, let me mention, there is a background tasking API in Windows Phone 8 as well, but it's a very different one. It's one that's basically identical to the background tasking API inherited from Windows Phone 7. It supports a lot of the same concepts in terms of how often you can execute code in the background, what resource constraints are placed on you, but the API in Windows Phone is quite different. We are focusing on the background tasking API for Windows Store apps. So what do you need to do to code up a background task? The first thing you do is you go into the solution where your Windows Store app is housed, and you add a new project to that solution of type Windows Runtime Component. This project will house the code for your background task, and yes, it does have to be in a separate project. What you're going to do in that new project is add a class to it, and you're going to implement an interface in that class named iBackgroundTask. Now, if you look that interface up in the documentation, you'll find that it's a simple one. It has just one method named run. That method is a virtual method. Your job in that derived class is to override the run method and to write into it the code that you want to execute in the background. Then you have to register that task with the operating system. You do this from the main app, the Windows Store app that will be launching this background task. I'll show you the API for doing that. It's a simple one. But realize up front that once your app registers a background task, it nominally remains registered forever. There are certain things that can cause it to become unregistered. For example, there is an API allowing you to unregister it. If the user uninstalls that Windows Store app from their machine, any background tasks it registered are automatically unregistered also. But as long as that app remains on the machine, that background task doesn't expire. Which means if we're going to register this background task when our Windows Store app starts up, we'll need to make sure that the task isn't already registered. And yes, there is an API for doing that. While the system won't complain if you register the same background task multiple times, you won't like the results because you'll have multiple redundant background tasks running, each chewing up CPU time that goes against your quota. So when we write code into this sample I'm going to build that registers the background task, before we do any registration, we'll also make very sure that that task is not already registered. One other thing that you have to be careful to do is to declare in the Windows Store app's manifest that this app supports background tasks. Now, it's perfectly legal for one Windows Store app to have multiple background tasks registered. That means you'll have multiple classes implementing the iBackground task interface. It also means you'll have multiple declarations in the app manifest identifying each of those background tasks. Now, let me show you some of the things we're going to do in code in this next demo. And then we'll drop right into Visual Studio and get started working to see if we can actually make this work. Number one, to physically code up your background task, remember, in a separate project that is linked to, referenced by your Windows Store app project, you'll add a class, and in that class you'll implement the iBackground task interface. In that class, you'll override the virtual method named run, as I've done right here. And it is inside that run method that you place the code that's going to execute in the background when that background task is triggered. Over in the main app, you'll need to register that background task. But remember, it's important to first make sure it isn't already registered. So there's a very simple way to enumerate all of the background tasks that your app has registered, showing that code right here. The key is the static all tasks property of the background task registration class. If you've determined that that background task is not already registered, then you'll need to register it before it will ever get the opportunity to run. And to do that, you use the background task builder class. You begin by newing up an instance of that class. You give this task a name, which can be anything you want. Then you initialize its task entry point property with the fully qualified type name of the class in the other project that implements the iBackground task interface. The next thing you do is you call setTrigger. You call this only once per task. In fact, you must call it exactly once per task. The trigger is what tells the operating system when you want this task to run. Now, in this first sample that I do, I'm going to use a system trigger called the time zone change trigger. That asks the system to wake this background task up and run it anytime the time zone is changed on the host device. The reason I'm using that is not that I think that one will be incredibly useful in the real world, but it will give us an easy way to trigger our task and to actually see it do something. All I'll do is pop out to the desktop on my laptop here and change the time zone to something other than whatever it is. This whole concept of triggers is something that doesn't exist over on the Windows phone. It's new to Windows 8. And as you're going to see, it's quite powerful because the system provides for us a lot of different triggers that we can use to specify when the background task can run, including something, by the way, called the maintenance trigger, which lets us request that the background task run periodically. It's important to note that a task cannot have more than one trigger, but every task must have one trigger. Once I've done all that, then I call register on the background task builder object, and that background task now becomes registered, and if I've done everything right, it will execute the next time the trigger fires, which in this example should be the next time the time zone is changed on this computer. By the way, notice that little note over in red in the lower right corner. That second parameter to the system trigger constructor obviously is a Boolean, true or false. If you pass in true, that means it's a one-time trigger. If you pass in false, it is a recurring trigger. So because I'm passing in false, this background task should get the chance to execute any time the time zone is changed, whereas if I change that to true, it would only execute the next time the time zone is changed on this computer. Now remember, in addition to writing the code, there are some things you have to do declaratively as well. Specifically, you have to go into the application manifest and declare the background task or tasks that this Windows Store app registers. Now, I've shown a screenshot here from Visual Studio's manifest editor. There are a few pieces of information you have to provide, including what type of trigger is being used. Since we're using a system trigger here of type time zone event, then I've checked the system event box. And then, down in the box near the bottom, on the line labeled entry point, you have to specify again the fully qualified type name, that is namespace name dot class name, of the class in which you implemented iBackgroundTask. Now, yes, there is some redundancy here. You have to enter that fully qualified type name in two places, once in the manifest right here, and again in your code where you knew after you knew up the background task builder. Is that a built-in redundancy? Yeah, there are reasons for it, but the bottom line is you have to do it in both places, and you have to do it right in order for this background task to run. Now, should you ever decide to unregister a background task that your app has registered, you can do that by calling unregister on the task itself. So here again, I'm enumerating all of the background tasks that my app has registered. I'm looking for a specific one by name that I registered earlier, and if I find it, then I call its unregister method so it becomes unregistered. One of the reasons you might want to do something like this is, let's say you publish version 1 of a Windows Store app, and it uses a background task to do something. Then in version 2, you no longer need that background task, or you want to replace it with another background task. Then what you can do when version 2 is run, when it's installed even, is unregister that old background task and register a new one. In fact, there's a special trigger type that allows you to execute when your app is updated from one version to another on the user's machine. I'll show you that trigger in just a few moments. But that's one common scenario in which it might be useful to unregister a background task. And with that, we're going to go to Visual Studio, and we're going to see if I know what I'm talking about. You never know, right? Like I told an audience earlier today, for all you know, I could be making up everything I tell you. Now, I'm not making it up, but I'm going to prove to you that I'm not making it up here. And the reason I'm going to do this build live here is because there are several steps that you have to make sure are done. I know because I've learned the hard way that if you forget one of these steps, well, it just doesn't work. Everything builds just fine. It executes just fine when you run the Windows Store app. And then you notice, wow, that background task is never executing. What did I do wrong? It turns out there's several little things you can do wrong or you can miss as you go through this process. So I'm going to try not to overlook any of those steps here and see if we can get a background task up and running first time. So let's go into Visual Studio, see if we can make this work. First thing I'm going to do is create a new Windows Store app project. We'll need to give this a name. We'll choose blank app as the template type. We'll call it, my background task demo or something like that. That's as good as any, I guess. I'll click OK, let Visual Studio generate a new solution for me containing a Windows Store app project. Now, in a moment, we'll write some code into here to register this background task the first time the app is run. But first, let's code up the background task itself. So I'm going to go up to the solution in Visual Studio, right-click it, and select Add New Project. This will be the project that hosts my background task. And it is important, in fact, vital, to choose Windows Runtime Component as the project type. Now, what are we going to call this? Let's call this, sample task, like that. So I'll click OK. We'll see another another project appear there. And here is one of those little steps that if you forget, it will just mysteriously not work. Everything will appear to be fine. You're called to register the task, won't throw an exception, but you'll just find that your background task never runs. You must add a reference to the Windows Store project to the project containing the background task. So that I don't forget that, let's go ahead and do it right now. So I'll right-click, do an Add Reference, and add a reference from my Windows Store App project to the project that's going to contain my background task. That's one thing that I now cannot forget. So let's go do some work on the background task now. So I'm going to get rid of this class 1.cs. We're just going to add a class of our own. So yes, we'll let that be deleted permanently. Always makes you kind of skittish when VS says, this will be deleted permanently. Are you really sure? Do you really want your hard disk formatted? I don't know. I'm going to ask Visual Studio to add a new class. And let's call this thing, how about my background task? Like that. Let's get the period in there. Let Visual Studio add it in, and now we get a blank task. Now, remember, this task needs to implement the iBackgroundTask interface, so I'll add that in. And it looks like I'm going to need a using statement, so we'll let Visual Studio help me with that. And now that I've done that, I can even get some help from Visual Studio, of course, in implementing the interface. And because the interface does have just one member, that virtual method named run, there's not a whole lot to doing this. Now, chances are we want to do more than throw a not implemented exception, so I'll do that right there. Now, let me show you another one of those little steps that if you forget, it will simply mysteriously not work. And again, I know this because I have made this mistake on more than one occasion. This class that implements iBackgroundTask must be public and it must be sealed. If you forget this right here, everything will compile and run just fine. That background task will never execute. The class must be public and it must be sealed. Don't forget that. So there's another critical item that I've now done and can't forget to do. So what does the run method do? Well, this is where we're going to add the code that we want to execute in the background. So here's what I want to do. Background tasks have very, very limited ability to update the application's UI. And there's a good reason for that. There's no guarantee that at the moment this background task executes, that the Windows Store app that the task belongs to is executing as well. So I can't get a reference to the Windows Store app and update some XAML in it. That app may not even be running. In fact, to first order, you cannot update the UI from a background task. But there are a couple of things you can do. One, you can write data out to a persistent data store so that when your Windows Store application runs later, if it runs again, it can read that data. So if you're doing some computational work or something in the background task and you want your Windows Store app to pick it up the next time it starts, you can do that. And I've got a slide on that. I'll show you how to do it later. But there are a couple of things that a background task can do UI-wise. It can update the application's tile, for example. It can put a badge on the tile, a number from 1 to 99, or it can put a glyph badge, one of 13 predefined glyphs that Windows 8 allows code to put on a tile. You can do all of that from a Windows Store app. You can do it from a background task as well. You can also pop up a toast notification from a background task that tells the user something has happened, like maybe this is a weather app that's going to warn the user that there's bad weather coming, and you're going to ask this background task to check every 20 minutes or 30 minutes or something. You could pop up a toast notification if you see bad weather coming that tells the user, bad weather coming, tap here to learn more. And if the user then chooses to tap that toast, then the Windows Store app that registered this background task will be launched for them. But outside of displaying toasts and updating tiles, there's virtually nothing in terms of the UI that a background task can do. But in this case here, I want to see some visible evidence that it is executed. So what I'm going to do is add a glyph to the application's tile. Now to do that, so I'm not standing here typing for 5 minutes, I'm going to jump forward into the slides and borrow some code from one of the slides. And we'll actually talk more about what this code does a little bit later. Right here is what I want. And let's say, yeah, we'll do this one right here. So let me paste that code in there, and I will take a moment to explain what it's doing. Let's give Visual Studio a little formatting help here. Looks like I need some using statements as well, so let's do this. XML element, I'll need that as well. And looks like we're almost ready there. Let's close that space up a little bit. Still getting some squigglies. We're going to have to figure out there under XML element. Oh, I think I selected the wrong using statement. Let's see here. Let's do an XML element. Let's get rid of this one right here. Don't believe that's the one that we want. Instead, the one we want is this one. Well, that appeared to be the right one. So what's Visual Studio telling me here? Returns a collection of specified name, assignment. Oh, am I must be missing a parent or something. Oh. I wonder if I bet I need that right there. There we go. I think that does it. Looks like there was a typo in my slide. I think that did it there. If not, we're going to find out, because we're not going to see anything appear on the tile. In fact, I'm going to do something else here. Instead of putting a number on the tile, I'm going to put a little "you have mail" icon, one of those 13 predefined glyphs. Now, if you've never seen code like this in a Windows Store app, this is not specific to a background task. Again, this is something the app itself can do. Apps do have freedom to perform certain types of updates on their own tiles, primary and secondary. What I'm doing here is using WinRT's Badge Update Manager class to grab an XML template defining the content that I want to appear on my application's tile, and I'm adding in a badge whose value is new message. That should cause, if this works, a little mail icon to appear on the screen. So, if all this works, if and when this background task executes, we should be able to verify that by going over to the start screen, looking at the application tile, and seeing if a little mail or envelope icon has appeared on it. So that does it for the background task. The big items is I added a separate project to my solution, and I made sure to add a reference from the Windows Store app to the project. In that project, I implemented a class that in turn implements the iBackground task interface. I made sure that the class was both public and sealed. And in that class, I overrode the run method and inserted the code that's going to execute in the background when this task executes. And as you know, the code that I inserted in there is going to cause a visible change to the application's tile so we can tell if it actually worked or not. So far, so good. Now we need to go back to the Windows Store app and do some work over there. First thing we need to do is this right here. Let me grab this class name, save a little typing. And back in the Windows Store app, let's go into the application manifest. Remember, for each and every background task that you register, you must also declare that task in the application manifest. So we'll go to the declarations tab of the manifest. Under available declarations, I'll find background tasks. And since I'm only going to register one background task, I'll click add just one time. If I were registering three or four background tasks, again, I would need to declare each one of those right here by clicking that add button a couple more times. Now, one nice thing about this UI here that Visual Studio gives you is with the red X's, it's telling you that, hey, there's more information you have to provide before this thing will build and run. You have to, for example, specify what kind of trigger you're going to use. I will be using a system trigger, so I'll check the system event box there. And down in this app entry point box, you have to specify the fully qualified type name of the class that implements iBackgroundTask. For me, that will be, let's see, the class name was myBackgroundTask, and the namespace name should be sampleTask, like that. Now, by the way, if you misspell something there, it'll build just fine, but it'll throw an exception at runtime. So you have to, unfortunately, type that class name in there. So if I do a save there, all the X's go away. It looks like Visual Studio is happy with what I've done. So I think up to this point, Windows 8 is going to be happy as well. What remains is to write some code into our app to register that background task. Now, remember that it's important to only do this one time, because once registered, a task remains registered in theory infinitely. This is a little bit different from background tasks on the Windows Phone, by the way, where a task, if not where a task once registered, will time out after usually 14 days. The thinking there on the part of the Windows Phone team originally was, hey, let's say a user is just trying out some apps from the Windows Phone store. They find an app, they download it, they try it. They don't really like it, so they never run it again. But that one time the app ran, if it happened to register a background task, well, it could be sitting there sucking up CPU cycles periodically, even though the user has totally forgotten they installed it. So the Windows Phone team decided, we'll expire these things after a couple of weeks. They don't do that in Windows 8. By default, the task never expires. So it is very, very important to make sure that you don't re-register it time and time again. So what we're going to do is first find out, have we already registered this task? Let's give the task a name up here. We can call this anything we want. I'll declare a private field. We'll do it const string. And let's call it name. And this is what we're going to call our task. I'll simply call it my task, like that. Then let's do this. Remember the background task registration class. I'm going to need once more a using statement to get some IntelliSense help. Has a property, a static property named all tasks, which is an IEnumerable, encapsulating all the tasks I've registered. And what I'll do is use a little bit of link. I'll say where, and let's see, we'll do an x, and how about the lambda x dot value, which is the task itself dot name equals underscore name dot first or default. So basically, if I've already registered this task named my task, that's going to give me back a null or a non-null value. But if I haven't registered, I'm going to get back null. So what I'll do is do this. I'll say if task.value, whoops, that's wrong. Sometimes IntelliSense is a little bit too smart. Let's do this. That's why I didn't want it. I'll assign that to task like that. Now, this should work a little bit better. I'll say if task.value equals null, meaning the task has not already been registered, then I'll register it. And to save a little bit of typing time, I'll once more go back to the slides and I'll borrow some code that we've already seen. Let's go back to the slide that showed the registration code right here. And I'll begin by cutting and pasting this, but we will do some modification that's specific to our task. So let's see. New background task builder, that line is fine. Name, instead of hard coding that name in there, we're going to use underscore name, that private field I declared just a few moments ago. Remember, that's how we're searching for the task to find out if we've already registered it. I'll need to put in that fully qualified type name again right here just to make sure I don't mess that up. Let's go back to the app manifest and get it here. That way it's either going to be right in both places or wrong in both places. And we'll paste that in right here. Then we need to think about what type of trigger are we going to use. In this case, again, so that we have an easy way from a user's perspective of triggering this task and getting it to run, we're going to use the system trigger that will cause this task to execute any time the time zone changes on this computer. And with that, we will then register the task. If I haven't missed something, I've done everything that we need to do to spin up and run a background task. Now, it's possible I missed something, but the only way to know at this point is to build it, to run it, and to find out. So let's do that. I'll do the control or the F5 thing. Hopefully it'll build fine. We get a really, really great UI here. But it's not the UI that we're worried about. It is getting that background task registered. I probably should have set a breakpoint so we could step through the code. We're going to assume it did. Now, what happens if we go out to the start screen right now? Are we going to see any change on that tile? No, we shouldn't. Here is the application tile. You can see there's no badge on there. But of course, I haven't changed the time zone in the computer yet, right? So let's see if we can force that background task to run. I'll switch back out to the desktop and go into adjust date time. And I'm currently set for GMT plus one. Tomorrow I'll be flying home to the United States, where we're 6 hours behind. So let's go ahead and set my clock for the east coast of the United States. Say right here. I'll click OK there. I click OK there. And sometimes it takes a few seconds. So we'll let Windows 8 kind of percolate on that just a moment. Now let's pop out to the start screen. And it looks like my background task ran. How about that? Well, thank you. I'm glad you're that easy to please, and I'm glad that I did everything right, because there are a lot of little places you can mess up, as you see there. So we just saw some visible evidence that that background task ran, and of course it ran because of the trigger that I used, and because I then went out and changed the time zone on the computer. Now, let me ask you this. Suppose I had used another trigger type, maybe one that says, I'd like to execute this code every 30 minutes. What would I have done then in this demo? One thing I could have done is executed the code and then said, okay, we're going to take a 30-minute break now. We're going to come back in 30 minutes, and we're going to find out if that little icon appeared on the tile. Believe it or not, in the very early days of Windows Phone and some of the early pre-release builds, when you used its background tasking API, that's exactly what you had to do, because there wasn't a way at that time to force it to run. Fortunately, Visual Studio got really smart, and today, both in Windows 8 and in the Windows Phone, there is in Visual Studio a way to force a task to run and to watch what happens in that task in the debugger. I'm not going to demonstrate that just yet, because I don't need it here. But in the next demo that I do, I'm going to show you how to use the debugger in VS to force a task to run, show you how to set breakpoints and step through it and all that sort of thing. But so far, so good. We just saw a background task run. And by the way, if I change the time zone again, we'll see that same glyph badge appear there, so we won't really see any visible change if I change it again. But because I did pass false in that second parameter to the system trigger constructor, it should run each and every time the time zone is changed on this computer. Yes, sir. What do you see in the task manager? Yeah, it's a good question. If I brought up task manager right now, you would see no evidence whatsoever that that thing executed. So by default, when a background task executes, it executes in a dedicated process called background task host.exe. But Windows doesn't spin that process up and leave it running. It spins it up for the purpose of running that background task, of executing it, and then it tears the process down. So unless you get lucky, unless you happen to pop up task manager at the exact moment that background task host.exe is up and running, you won't see any visible evidence at all that it is run. And since your background tasks are going to be do their work very quickly, chances are you'll never be able to catch it in task manager. Good question there. So are you with me so far on this? Does that make sense? Hopefully it's not too hard. It's more tedious than it is hard, right? Because you have to remember to do all those little things like make the class public and sealed and add the reference to the project. But you know, after you've done it 20 or 30 times, it becomes second nature. So let's go a little bit deeper. Obviously, that trigger that I just used, which triggers a background task only when the time zone changes on the computer, probably isn't that useful in the real world. So it begs the question, what other kinds of triggers does Windows 8 place at my disposal? And this is where it starts to get interesting and to get a lot richer as well. So let's look at these triggers that it provides us. There are five basic trigger types that are exposed to you by WinRT. I've listed them here: the system trigger, the maintenance trigger, the timer or time trigger, the push notification trigger, and the control channel trigger. For the moment, we're going to focus on two of these, the system trigger and the maintenance trigger, because those are the only two that a non-lock screen app can use. The other three triggers, I'll circle back and cover towards the end when we specifically talk about lock screen apps. They are very special triggers that, again, are only available to apps that the user has placed on the lock screen. So, what system trigger types do I have? First off, you may have noticed a little asterisk next to system trigger in the table on the previous slide. There are more than a dozen different system trigger types. Most of those can be used in any Windows Store app, but some are only available to those apps that the user has placed on the lock screen. On this slide, you see the system triggers that are available to all Windows Store apps. In fact, you've seen one of these used in my previous demo, the time zone change trigger. But take a look at some of these others. Maybe you want to use the Internet Available trigger. Why would you do that? I was working with a customer just recently over in Asia who built software that's used by people all over the world, including some pretty remote places out in the bush of Africa where Internet connections are very hard to come by. This customer is going to great pains to build an offline strategy into their software so that someone using it out in the bush of Africa can do all their data entry, and then when they get back to the office and plug into the network and have a connection, they can upload the data that they had cached. An Internet Available trigger might be perfect for that kind of thing. Allow the user to enter all the data they want to. You detect that you don't currently have an internet connection, so you store that, maybe in the application data store. But then you register a background task so that when that user gets back to the office and plugs into the network, even if your application is not currently running, the background task will be awakened and given a chance to upload that data to a web service somewhere. That's just one example. There are others. For example, the servicing complete trigger can be a useful one. It's kind of interesting, and I mention this because I'm asked this question a lot. Is it possible to hook into the installation of a Windows Store app so that when that app is installed, you can execute some code as well? The answer is no. The installation and uninstallation process for Windows Store apps was designed to be very simple and very fast. If there's something you want to do, you have to wait until the first time your app is run. But there is a corollary to that. There's a system trigger called the servicing complete trigger. If you register a background task in your app with a servicing complete trigger, and the user then downloads a new version of that app from the Windows Store and installs it on their machine, then your background task will run in response to that trigger. That means if, say, from version 1 to 2 of your app, you change the schema of some data that you're storing on the client side, and you want to update that schema before version 2 of your app runs for the same time, you can do that update in the background task. Now, of course, you're not required to do it that way. You could just write version 2 of the app so that each time it runs, it recognizes that version 1 schema and updates itself. But if you would prefer to have that done before the app even runs for the first time, that's why Microsoft provided the servicing complete trigger. And you can look at these others here. You can pretty much discern from their names what they do. What's important is that these are system triggers. So when you go into the manifest, you check that system event box, like I did earlier, and that none of these triggers require the app to be a lock screen app. They're available to all Windows Store apps. Now, again, we're going to circle back towards the end and talk about the special things that lock screen apps can do. And I'm going to show you an example of a lock screen app as well. There are four system trigger types that are only available to lock screen apps. I've listed those right here. User away or user present, for example. If the lock screen appears because the screen has timed out, because the user hasn't been touching the screen or touching the trackpad or typing for a few minutes or something like that, if you're a lock screen app, you can be notified of that in that you can register a background task to run in response. But again, these are very much a special case because the vast majority of Windows Store apps are not lock screen apps. So here's an example of using one of these other system trigger types where there is some work I want to do in the background if and when I publish a new version of this application and a user goes to the store, finds it, and decides to apply that update. Notice that I'm using a system trigger here, but its type is service incomplete. Remember, that trigger wakes up your background task and gives it a chance to execute if and when the app's version is updated, or I should say, when a new version of that same app is installed on your machine. Now, this trigger here may interest most of you in this room more. The maintenance trigger is the way you do periodic work in a background task. Maintenance trigger is like a time trigger. It executes at specified intervals, but unlike time trigger, which is only available to lock screen apps, maintenance trigger is available to all Windows Store apps. So if I wanted to execute something, some code every 15 minutes, say, then when I register this background task, I would new up a maintenance trigger and pass that to set trigger. Now, when you new up the maintenance trigger, you can see its constructor takes two parameters. The first is the number of minutes between intervals, the interval, defining how often this task should run. You can pass any number you want in there, and the compiler will be happy. But at runtime, if you try to pass in a number less than 15, the system will throw an exception. Under no circumstances, with the maintenance trigger or time trigger, does Windows 8 allow you to execute code in the background more often than every 15 minutes. Now, you can execute it less often if you want to. You can pass in 30 minutes or 60 minutes, but 15 minutes is the minimum that you can pass in. The second parameter tells the system whether this maintenance trigger should be one-shot or recurring. Generally, if you use this trigger, it's probably because you want to execute code every 15 minutes or every 30 minutes or what have you, so you pass false in that second parameter, as I've done right here. Now, I'm going to show you a demo in a moment that uses a maintenance trigger to do some interesting work periodically in the background, something a little less trivial than what we did in that first demo. But first, let me mention to you something called conditions. I think conditions were brilliant, because this is something that doesn't exist in the Windows Phone background tasking API. On a Windows Phone, you can have a background task execute periodically. I think the minimum on the phone, if I remember correctly, is every 30 minutes, not 15. In fact, it is. But there's no way to tell the system that you only want your background task to wake up and execute if certain conditions are met. So think back to that scenario where you've built offline support into your app so that users who are doing data entry, when there is no internet connection available, you're just caching the data, then waiting for a connection to come available so you can upload it. Well, it wouldn't make any sense to have this background task run if there were no internet connection available. So what conditions allow you to do is specify additional conditions that have to be true when the trigger fires for Windows to actually wake up and execute this task. Now, while a task can only have one trigger associated with it, it can have any number of conditions, zero or more. These are the classes currently defined in WinRT that model the conditions. So let's say I want to do some periodic work, so I'm using a maintenance trigger. Maybe I'm going to set this task to fire every 15 minutes or 20 minutes. But whatever I'm doing in this task, I require an internet connection. Maybe I'm going to make a call out to a web service or something like that. So I decide I'm going to add a condition to it as well. And the cool thing about this is, whereas on the Windows Phone, I would have to wake up, programmatically check to see if there's a connection, and then return to go back to sleep, essentially, if there were not. I've used up some of my CPU quota right there by doing that. Here, when the trigger fires, if there is no internet connection available, then the system won't even wake that task up, and I will consume zero CPU cycles, and therefore zero of my CPU quota. So, every task must have one and exactly one trigger. Every task can have zero or more conditions associated with it. Which conditions you'll use, or if you choose to use them at all, will be very application specific. This shows how to add a condition to a task. You simply call the add condition method, and again, you can call that multiple times, each with a different condition, to attach multiple conditions to it. Now, I'm going to show you a demo in a moment, but first I want to address this. And I alluded to this earlier, but I want to be more explicit. As I said before, a background task has only very limited ability to interact with the UI. And again, the big reason for that is there's no guarantee whatsoever that when your background task executes, the app that it belongs to will be executing as well. Even if it is, you still can't get to that app's UI. So what if you're doing some work in that background task? Maybe you're doing some computational work or something like that. And the next time the Windows Store app runs, you want to know what the results of that computation was so you can display it to the user. Maybe you're doing some data mining or something on a very large data set in a background task, and you simply want to show a percent complete indicator if the user starts the app up. Here's the strategy we use for doing that. Application data is something that is endemic to most Windows Store apps. Every Windows Store app is given an application data store. In fact, there are several sub-stores inside it. If you're familiar with these, you know what I'm talking about. If not, there are properties of application data like local folder, roaming folder, local settings, roaming settings, and temporary folder, each representing a different place the data can be stored persistently on the client side in a way that makes the data private that other apps can't get to. Well, it turns out that even though a background task executes by default in a different process than the Windows Store app itself, they run in the same app container, which is sort of a security and isolation boundary in Windows 8. The fact that they run in the same container means in your background task, you can write something to application data. It could be a simple number or a string, or it could be megabytes of data if you'd want to. It doesn't matter. And then the next time your Windows Store app runs, it can reach into that same application data store, and it will see the data written there by the background task. So when it comes to communicating between a background task and the Windows Store app that it belongs to, there is no direct communication mechanism like a named pipe or anything like that. There really can't be, given that they're probably never going to be running at the same time. But there is an indirect mechanism, which is the application data store. The task writes data to it. When the app wakes up and runs, it reads that data. And by the way, it's a two-way mechanism. The app can write data into an application data store itself, which the background task, when it executes, can read from the application data store. Hopefully that makes sense. Now, let's give it a try here. I want to run another app for you, something that does a little bit something more useful. And I'm going to have to make one apology up front, because it relies on a U.S. government web service that doesn't know Europe exists. I think Europe does still exist. If it doesn't, I guess I'm in trouble, huh? So let me walk you through the code first to show you what this thing does, and then we'll take a look and see what it does when it runs. So Periodic Task Demo is the Windows Store app project. Periodic Task is the task, the project that holds the background task. Take a look here in mainpage.xaml.cs for the Windows Store app. First thing I do is I make sure when the app starts up that I have an internet connection. Here's a little bit of boilerplate code for doing that in WinRT. Then I try to do this. I first use the new location API in WinRT to find out where I am, what my current latitude and longitude is. Then I take that latitude and longitude and I feed it in an HTTP call to a U.S. government web service that will give me information about that latitude and longitude, like the city and state that it corresponds to, the current temperature at that location, etc. So what I get back from this call here out over the internet is a big glob of XML. And what I'm doing here is parsing that XML to pull out just the parts I care about, namely the city, the state, and the current temperature. And if all that works, then I display that to the user. Remember, this is not the background task. This is the Windows Store app. And if anything goes wrong, then I simply display a message saying weather data unavailable. And unfortunately, this is what we're going to see, since this U.S. government web service that's supposed to provide worldwide weather data will only provide weather data for the United States of America. Maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe I just caught it on a bad day when I tried this in Belgium the other day. I don't know. But that's all fine and good. That has nothing to do with background tasks. That's just a Windows Store app. But take a look at this. I also, in this Windows Store app, check to see if I have previously registered a background task named Periodic Task. And if the answer is no, then I register a background task. This is its name, its fully qualified name. We'll look at the code in just a moment. Significantly, I'm using a maintenance trigger. I'm asking that this background task execute every 15 minutes on a recurring basis. And because in the background task, I am going to be making calls out over the internet, I also add a condition to it saying I only want this task to execute when the trigger fires, if indeed the internet is currently available. Then here, I register the task. So what does the task do? Well, let's take a look at the code. It does essentially the same thing that the Windows Store app does. It wakes up every 15 minutes or so, finds out what my current location is, feeds that latitude and longitude off to a web service that gives me the current conditions, and then it updates the application's badge by showing the current temperature in degrees Fahrenheit, sorry for that too, on the application badge. Now, a badge can only be a number from 1 to 99, so I make sure that the current temperature is a number. Sometimes it gets hotter than that in certain parts of the U.S., but where I live, it rarely ever gets above 99, rarely ever gets below 1 degree F either. 1 degree F is cold, by the way. If you've never been in it, it is very cold, especially if there's a nice wind blowing. So, anyway, here's code very, very much like what you saw a few moments ago in my first demo to update the application's badge. So let me tell you why I wrote this thing. What I can do with this, and I built a version of this for my phone, which runs on here. I travel quite a bit, And oftentimes, when I come to a new location, I'll land, get in the airport, I'll fire up my Windows phone, go to the weatherchannel.com app or something like that, and find out, what the current conditions are, the forecast. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat if I had an app that just followed me around? Automatically, every time I pull my phone out, it knows where I am and shows me the current conditions at that location. That's where this app came from. That's interesting. Something's loose in my phone. That's a little bit scary. Hopefully there's a good thing I'm not using my phone in any of these demos right here. So that's what this does. What I can do, I can get off that airplane, fire up my laptop, and if I go look at the tile for the app, assuming the background task has been given the opportunity to run, which could take up to 15 minutes after I start up, or could happen immediately, that's basically up to the OS, I'll see the current temperature wherever I currently am. Now, let's see if the thing works. So what I'm going to do is do an F5 to run it, because it hasn't been installed before, or at least it's been uninstalled, and it does use the location API. The operating system asks me, is it okay if this app gets your current location? I'll say allow. And I think if you debug through this code, you'll find that it actually is getting my current latitude and longitude. The failure is going to come in when I pass that latitude and longitude to the U.S. government web service. Now, that's interesting. I had this happen in Belgium the other day. That should not be sitting there spinning. We have had some rather squirrely internet connections here, so let me try this. Let me go out and make sure I still have an internet connection. We do. Maybe I had momentarily lost it. I don't know. Let's see if it's a little bit faster this time around. Well, we're just going to... okay, weather data unavailable again. Blame the U.S. government on that, and also blame me for not having the insight to use a more robust current weather conditions web service. But at least we saw that this executed. But wait a minute. When this thing ran for the first time, it also registered a background task. So let's shut it down here. I'll just close it down in the debugger. And let's go over to the start screen. Let's find the tile for this app right here, periodic task demo. And even though... I'm going to fail in the background task when I attempt to get the current temperature at this location. In the catch half of the try-catch block, what I do in that case is I put an error glyph in the lower right corner of the tile. So once the background task executes, we'll see a little X appear in the lower right corner. Now, remember, I used a maintenance trigger, so it should be executing every 15 minutes. I don't have any guarantees that it's going to execute immediately. In fact, it generally will be about 15 minutes before it executes for the first time. So now we wait for 15 minutes. We'll just stare at the screen. Now, you know I'm joking there. No, let me show you how to debug one of these things, how to force it to run, and more importantly, how to set breakpoints in it and actually step through the code in case something is going wrong. If we go back over to Visual Studio here, what I'm going to do is go into the periodic task code here, right here. And let's just set a breakpoint right here. And then we're going to run the app again so we get it in the debugger. And I shouldn't have to wait for that to come back. I should be able to go back now and do this. Here's the cool thing in Visual Studio. That little debug location toolbar that lets you suspend, resume, and simulate suspensions and terminations. When you have one or more background tasks registered and you're in the debugger, you'll see those background tasks show up right there. Remember, periodic task is the class name of my periodic task. Had I registered multiple background tasks, they would show up here. By the way, if you're building something like this yourself and for no apparent reason, your background tasks don't show up in that dropdown, that means you've forgotten something. You've probably gotten the type name wrong in the manifest. You forgot to add a reference from the Windows Store project to the background task project or something like that. So, fortunately, everything was done right here. So I'll select periodic task. And look at that, breakpoint hit. We just forced the thing to run in the debugger. And now if we want, we can step through it. In fact, we'll find out here. Is it actually getting the location properly? We're still waiting for it. Okay, it came back to the deferral, so I'm going to say run to cursor right here. And we should find, in fact, those values are probably already filled in. What is latitude? Now we're going to have to run to cursor. So let's do that. And latitude, indeed, I assume that's our current latitude and longitude. I'm not sure about that. Let's keep going here. We'll fire off the call to that web service. And then let's run to cursor right here. And I think we're going to find that this is where the exception is being thrown, because the XML I'm getting back basically says that latitude and longitude don't exist. After all, it's not in the United States. So indeed, we're going down to the exception right here. So that's obviously a very key thing to know, how to debug a background task. Let me mention something else too. Did you notice this call to get deferral right here? And this call to deferral.complete. You also notice that I would set a breakpoint, do an F10, and all of a sudden we would jump back up to here. Some of you in this audience, maybe many of you, know what's going on. Those of you that don't know, this is one of the most important things you may ever learn about Windows Store app programming. Async and await is a new pattern in C# 5 designed to make asynchronous programming simpler, to allow you to write code that looks almost like synchronous code, but that is in fact asynchronous. The way it works is, when I call an async method and use C# new await keyword, the compiler is actually generating code that returns from that method, but only after registering a handler for an async event that fires when that I/O is complete. That's important. When you use await, it looks like you're working linearly through that method. In fact, the method is returning every time you call await. Most of the time, you don't care about that. But there are certain places, certain times in Windows 8 when the system is calling you. And when you return from the method it called, it assumes you're done unless you tell it otherwise. Here's the problem. The first time I hit an await there, since we know the method's actually returning, by default, the system's going to assume that background task is done and no code after that await will execute, unless I grab a deferral by calling that getDeferral method. That says to the system, I'm going to return from this method one or more times, but don't assume that I'm finished. I'll tell you when I'm finished. That gives all the code in the method a chance to execute. I have several calls to await in here, at least two. Here's one await. Here's another one. Do I have others? Looks like I don't. But once I've done all of that, then I call complete on the deferral. That tells the system, okay, I'm done executing code in the background for now. Put me to sleep. Wake me back up if the time is appropriate. Now, if we pop out to the start screen, am I still in the debugger? No, that's fine. If we pop out to the start screen, we're going to see a little X appear right there. Had I run this in the United States, or had I hard-coded in a latitude and longitude, we would have seen a current temperature in degrees Fahrenheit appear there as well. Okay? So that's how you do periodic background code execution. Now, let's go back over to the slides for a moment, because we have not talked in detail about lock screen apps. And I want to, at least in the interest of a complete education, educate you about these as well. Especially since they do enjoy some options that ordinary Windows Store apps do not. So lock screen apps are apps that are added to the lock screen by users. If you've never seen this done, let me show you this. If I go over here to settings and change PC settings, under personalize, I see a lock screen tab. And right now, this is telling me that there are four Windows Store apps installed on my machine that have been afforded the freedom by the user to show things on the lock screen. They show them in little, generally little icons that appear right down here. In fact, if you pop out to my lock screen, let's just do that real quick. I'll do a Control-Alt-Delete. Hopefully it won't kick the projector out. Yeah, you can see a couple of icons down there placed there by lock screen apps. Now let's get back in here. What the user can do is click this plus sign and show a list of all the Windows Store apps on this machine that have indicated through the manifest that they are capable of integrating with the lock screen. And the user can choose one of those apps to add you to the lock screen. If the user does that, and there's no way to force it, it's something that only the user can do, then you are a lock screen app, and you can take advantage of some of the richer elements of the background tasking API. Now, let's see here. Let's close that down and get back into the slides, so I can say more. So here's an example of what these lock screen apps can do. And there are basically two things that they can do in Windows 8. Number one, any one of the up to seven apps that the user adds to the lock screen can update a badge down there at the lower left corner. The badge is the number, a number from 1 to 99, or one of those 13 predefined glyphs like the new mail icon. The lock screen app can also display a little icon there. I believe it's 36 by 36 pixels, if memory serves me correctly, with a transparent background. You'll see one of mine in just a moment. The user can also choose to allow one of those up to seven lock screen apps update the text that appears to the right of the time. Here you see it says Make Awesome Apps Build Conference or something like that. The cool thing is there's not a separate API allowing a lock screen app or specifically a background task launched by a lock screen app to do these updates. The same API that lets you update the text on a tile or the badge on a tile will not only update those elements on the application's tile, but if the app has been added to the lock screen, we'll update the corresponding elements on the lock screen as well. Now, to be a lock screen app, there's actually not a lot that you have to do. It's far more involved in Windows Phone 8, by the way. In Windows 8, you simply go into the manifest, you provide a 24 by 24, not 35 by 35, as I said, image with a transparent background, which would be your logo on the lock screen. If you want the option of displaying Toast from a lock screen app, then you select Toast capable of yes. But more importantly, under lock screen notifications, you choose either badge or badge and tile text, depending on whether you can only update badges on that lock screen or you would like to update text as well. By the way, any text updates that you attempt to push out will be ignored if the user has not designated you as the one lock screen app that is allowed to do that. Now, only the user can put you on the lock screen, but there is an API for finding out if you have that access. So, for example, if you try to register a time trigger and you don't have access to the lock screen, well, you're just going to throw an exception when you try to do that. So let me show you how these methods are used. This code here asks the OS, have I been added to the lock screen? If so, then I know that I can do all the things with the background task that a lock screen app can do. Now, you may wonder, if I'm not on the lock screen, can I prompt the user? Well, the answer is yes. There's a method named Request Access Async that will do that. Have you ever downloaded and installed an app from the store, and the first time you ran it, a little prompt came up that says, this app wants to use the locks. No, this app wants to run in the background. Have you ever seen that? That's actually a prompt from Windows. It happened because the app called Request Access Async. Technically, that doesn't mean the app wants to run in the background. What Windows should say is this app has requested access to your lock screen. If the user says yes, then the app gets added to the lock screen. The reason they say they use the background execution nomenclature is the only reason, there's no reason you would want to be a lock screen app if you're not using background tasks to periodically update that content. By the way, one of the mantras in Windows 8 is, you're not allowed to annoy the user. You can prompt the user one time and one time only. As long as that app is installed on the machine, they will never be prompted again. Request Access Async, you can call it all you want, but it will be ignored all times but the first. The only thing that can really change that is if the user uninstalls that app and then installs it again. Then your quota, if you will, is reset and you get a chance to prompt the user one more time. Now, among other things, being a lock screen app means you have greater access to CPU and network resources, as we discussed earlier. It also means that you have access to those other three triggers, the time trigger, the control channel trigger, and the other one whose name is escaping me right now. The control channel trigger, by the way, is the one that, for example, Microsoft Skype app uses. Oh, the other was the push notification trigger. If you wanted to be a background app that responded to push notifications from the Windows notification service in the cloud, and execute some code each time one of those notification arrives, you can do that with a push notification trigger, but you have to be a lock screen app to do it. That way, a Skype app or something could push data down from the cloud, indicating that something has changed that requires your attention. Here, I'm simply using a time trigger. It's functionally equivalent to a maintenance trigger, but it's only available to lock screen apps. Like maintenance triggers, it does not allow you to execute background code more often than every 15 minutes, unfortunately. Then, when it comes to updating the badge on a lock screen, exact same code that I used to update the badge on the application's tile earlier, or if you want to update the text on the lock screen, the same code you would use to update the text on the application's tile. Again, you don't get any indication whether this actually worked or not. It only works if the user has selected your app after installing it on the lock screen as the one and only one at a time that can update lock screen text. Now, this final demo here, we'll finish this up. I want to show you a project here named Lock Screen Demo. There don't seem to be a lot of lock screen applications samples floating around, which is one reason I wrote this one. What this one does is basically the same thing as the demo I showed you a moment ago, the periodic task demo. It registers a background task, asks that it execute every 15 minutes using a time trigger, not a, a maintenance trigger. And when it does execute, it gets my current location and gets the weather at that location. But instead of just showing it on the application tile, it shows it over on the lock screen. So let's try this here. Let's run this thing. Can it use my location? Yes. And I'll probably be prompted for access to the lock screen here. Well, that's interesting. I should have been. I don't know why that thing's spinning so long. Let's see here. Let's make sure that it's absolutely gone. I don't think it was here before, but the fact that I wasn't prompted makes me suspicious. Let's try it again. Can it use your location? Ah, here we go. From Windows. Will you let this application run in the background? In other words, will you allow it to be placed on the start screen? I'll say allow. Now it tells me weather data is unavailable. Let's go back here to Visual Studio, and let's force that background task to run. I still called it periodic task. So it just ran. Didn't see any evidence of that because I didn't set a breakpoint. But now if we shut it down and go out to the lock screen, we should see a new icon down there. There it is. There's the little 25 by 25 icon of a lightning bolt that I had in that app. And because it couldn't get the current temperature, it's showing me this error notification instead. But again, run it in the U.S. and you'll see a number there showing the current temperature wherever you are in degrees Fahrenheit. Now, just real quickly, since we're almost out of time, but our timing is good here, let me show you what's different about the code in this app and the one I showed you previously. And the big thing is this. The code for the background task is exactly the same, but in the Windows Store app itself, if you look in mainpage.xaml.cs, you should find that, yes, I am using a time trigger, only available to lock screen apps. And since those are only available to lock screen apps, I'm doing this. When I run, I find out, do I have access to the lock screen? If so, then I'm going to register my background task, and I'm done. If I don't have access to the lock screen, can I possibly get it? So I check for this return value from get access status. That says you're not on the lock screen, but the user has not been prompted before, so feel free to prompt them if you want. I call request access async. That's why that prompt came up saying, will you let this app run in the background? And if the return value from that indicates that I now have lock screen access, then I register the background task. If the user says no, there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. I might try to fall back and use a maintenance trigger rather than a time trigger, but if the user does not grant me access to the lock screen, this right here will throw an exception when I try to register it. So there you have the background tasking API in Windows 8. One last thing is there are some sort of corollary APIs that I haven't showed you, like a specific API for uploading and downloading files in the background. There's a specific API for apps that want to play music in the background, and a couple of others. But this is the big one, the generic API that lets you do almost anything else that you might want to do in the background. Last thing I'll do here is put this URL back up there so that if you would like to download these samples I just showed you, the zip file containing them is right here. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the conference.